Hello and welcome to the Camping Crew Podcast with Chris and Aaron.
Hi everybody, welcome to episode 179 of the Camping Crew Podcast. I'm Aaron Birchall.
And I'm Chris Byrne.
It's meant to be a fun podcast. We're just enthusiasts, and what we discuss on the podcast are just our own personal views, although we do look into things that you ask us to look into.
If you'd like to support the podcast, and if you can afford it, you can buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/thecampingcrew.
Right, what's happening in the news? Well, they say no news is good news, but there's a bit of online chatter about what to do for the holidays.
Yeah, Camping Ireland put out a post there with some tips on their blog for the June bank holiday weekend and in the entire month of June, and kind of what's happening around the place. They mentioned the Cork Harbour Festival and the Cork Midsummer Festival. They're talking about a list of old Writers Week, Ireland's Blue Way Network, what's going on there, Bloomsday Festival in Dublin. So plenty happening in June. I'm sure everybody will be out and about with the schools closing as well. The secondary schools will be a lot more activity about.
And the thing is, you'd want to start booking campsites now because we're actually away from the June bank holiday weekend. And believe me, even though that's before the school holidays, there's one or two campsites. We literally got the last couple of pitches. So if you're thinking the June bank holiday weekend, start thinking about booking campsites now.
Definitely. And I've shared that link on our Twitter page at the Camping Crew. But if you go to Camping Ireland, it should be there in our blog site as well.
Right, listeners' messages and follow-ups and shout-outs. Baz was on looking for a couple of stickers.
Yeah, so sent us a nice message. Hi guys, enjoying the podcast. He said, can I request a few stickers to advertise for you on my current van? He said, thanks and keep up the good work, Baz. So thanks for that, Baz. We'll get those out to you very soon. Keep an eye there.
Now, last week, with the last podcast, we were talking about weights and axle weights, and one of our listeners was saying that they wanted to buy a van but had to have six seats and six seat belts, and is that a C1 license? And then there was a bit of a chat about our discussion on one or two of the Facebook groups and on one or two of the forums, and you've got some notes to follow that up.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of confusion, I suppose, and, you know, why you would actually need the C1 license. So there was a good follow-up chat on motorhomeparkinglocations.com, and people might know that as Motorhome Crack as well. There's a forum topic there recently in the motorhome chat section called the C1, is it worth it? And the podcast got a mention because it was sparked by one of the people on that forum had mailed us as well about it. And Baguette there, as part of that forum, sent in a couple of replies and a bit of additional information, very good information. If people want to look at that, go to the forum I mentioned earlier and post number 36 and post number 38. Just a few points I wanted to kind of pick out of that initially. A lot more information there, but basically Baguette was saying a motorhome plated at 3,500 kilograms GVW can be driven on a car B license. He said, even if you have a C1 license, the above still applies. It's the plated GVW that governs the weight that the vehicle may carry, not the license. He also mentioned a C1 license is required that the vehicle is plated over 3,500 GVW. I think that's gross vehicle weight.
Yeah.
Even if the actual weight is not over 3,500 kilograms, so it's plated to be that, so you do need a C1 license. He mentioned about axle weights, and it's important as well. He says if an axle weight is listed on the VIN plate is exceeded, that's an offence, even if the GVW is not being exceeded.
Yes, that's what I was trying to explain, that if you load it, like the way you have the top bunk, you might just have a little bit too much weight on the front axles, even though your van is still under the permitted weight.
Yeah, there's more information there about uprating and getting the certificate in VINs. And there's a section in post number 38 about towing and that. So look, have a look at that. A lot more information, you know, as I said, on that post. Look, we're not experts. We were just having a discussion ourselves there. Like, so have a look and see, lots of information and lots of chat there, and plenty of chat happening there in the Motorhome Chat Forum on modern parking locations as well. So check some of that out.
And I think there was something on TV on Crime Watch or something about your license for towing caravans, which comes under the same heading. So listen, do your homework, do your research. Don't just pick one YouTube video and watch it. Get onto the official websites of the government that cover transport and pick up the phone and just do your research before you make any decisions on going for that extra truck license, or in case you buy the wrong caravan and you can't tow it because of your car or your license, do your research.
And don't take what we say as the absolute law, because we're not experts. Anyway, to move on.
Right. You know, we have campsitereview.com. Bill and Carol were on, and they left a great review about Meath Eco Park. If you remember, myself and Charlie were there at the tail end of last year. And they say, we stayed here over a recent bank holiday weekend and we just wanted to add our impressions. No doubt about it, this is a beautiful site, and certainly we found it extremely peaceful. However, there is a constant background noise of A, road noise, because it is right beside the busy M3 motorway, and B, aircraft noise, as it's on the airport flight path. That said, neither of these bothered us, but it's just worth a mention. The toilets and shower block are pretty basic and not very inviting. The dog exercise area is currently also in use for car storage. Fun for a bit of hide and seek all the same. The price is €20 plus €5 for electric hookup. It's very reasonable. And we did get delicious eggs each morning. There are plenty of routes around the lakes to explore too. I'd say we definitely will be back. Now, another thing they used to do, the eggs stopped for a while. And I got on to the owners and they said that Pine Martins got in and wiped out their whole hatchery. Oh, no. Absolutely took every chicken off the farm. So the eggs were stopped for a while. But it is a lovely place, Meath Eco Park. We brought it up in conversation. And again, we don't get things right. And I said, I don't think dogs are allowed there. And then the owner got on to me. I think the chap's name was John. And he invited myself and Charlie. It's adult only. Bear that in mind. It's called an eco park because he has this big garden full of solar panels. And I was very interested in the technical end of that. And the solar guys were there doing some upgrading. But it is a beautiful place. Sometimes you get a little bit of honey with your eggs because they also have hives. And be warned, when you are walking around one of the walks, the hives are all over the place. Bees don't like me. If they don't like you, be careful where you go. Meath Eco Park, campsitereview.com. Thank you to Bill and Carol. More reviews coming in now, of course, because the holiday season is more or less well and truly started.
You have a video up on that as well, Aaron, don't you?
Yeah, we did it. I think it would have been around this time last year. So go on to youtube.com/Charlie and Me. Do you know what? Go on to charlieandme.ie, click on the word map, and then just key in Meath Eco Park, and the video will be there. It is a beautiful site. It used to be a family fun park, but, you know, like amusements and stuff. But he couldn't get the insurance when everything was going haywire about 5, 6, 7 years ago. So he turned it into an eco camping park, and it is really beautiful. But check it out, campsitereview.com, and just click, go to Meath, and you'll see the review there.
Yeah, speaking of Charlie and Me, you had a video out today. Did you have more bits and pieces for us?
Yes, Wednesday, the van build. Today's was cutting the side panels, doing a bit of insulation. The build is coming on well. At the moment, when we're recording this today on the 25th of May, I got all the gas sorted. The gas has been a pain because it's a 1980s van and all the fixtures and fittings have increased to 10, 8 and 10 mil now, and mine was piped in 6 mil. I got it sorted today. But today, the smile on my face when I lit the gas burner, because I didn't know what it was going to work. The grill worked and the two burners worked, so I don't have to invest in a new cooking unit.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the finished product now. I've been deliberately not, I'm kind of avoiding calling up to see it. Just I want to see the finished product.
Yeah, hopefully tomorrow we lift in the furniture, start the wiring, fit the stereo. I was onto the insurance company yesterday, so the forms arrived. So that's how close we are to the finish. If you follow us on Instagram and Charlie and Me, our camping vlog, you'll get more up-to-date photos and videos compared to where we are on the Wednesday builds. But I'm thinking maybe in the next couple of weeks I might do a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, three videos just to really catch up to date. But it's coming on well. The campsite reviews will kick off again. We're heading off to Clare, Galway, Connemara, Mayo, Athlone, and a few other places. So the videos will start, the campsite review videos, which is what we're there for, will start coming up in the next couple of weeks.
they'll start trickling in. That's great. You might remember, Aaron, kind of at the start of the year, we put out a shout of people for topic suggestions to cover on this year's podcast. And Adrian, who you'll remember from a few previous podcasts, reached out to us to tell us that he went and hired a motorhome in Australia for 6 weeks. And I had a great chat with them. So we haven't had one in a while, but here's an interview with Adrian and June, and they're going to tell us about their holiday.
So June, I think I'll let you take the lead, because in fairness, you did a lot of organizing of this at the start. So
I mean, we were so grateful that we were able to do this trip, and it was 6 weeks in total. And we hired a motorhome for 4 weeks out of those 6 weeks. Adrian has sisters in Australia, so it was a great opportunity to meet up with them at the beginning and then at the end of the holiday. And how I mapped it out is we were flying into Sydney, spending a couple of days with family there. And then we hired the motorhome and took a month to go up the East Coast as far north as the town is called Yeppoon, but it's the southern tip of the Great Barrier Reef. And the reason I chose that distance is because we're covering huge distances, but I didn't want the kids to be stuck in a car all the time or the camper van all the time. So the days that we were driving, we didn't drive any more than like 3.5 hours max, so that they still got to see a good mix of countryside, seaside, resorts, national parks, and cities as well, all within that month duration.
I imagine it took a lot of planning before you went. Like, what resources did you use to plan some of that out?
I suppose there was a couple of things. I was there a good number of years ago as a backpacker myself. So I had a rough idea of the distances and the areas that I wanted to go back and revisit. So that was kind of good to have that kind of inside knowledge. The other resource I used was the Lonely Planet, essentially. Google Maps and then just Australian tourist websites to kind of help me pinpoint which areas I wanted to visit, why I wanted to go there, and what accommodation options were available in those different locations. And I wanted to make sure there was a mix of, as I said, seaside places plus city plus national parks, so that the kids who'd never been there before and Adrian hadn't done the East Coast either, we got a good mix of that variety, so they were able to experience it all.
To package all of that together with flights and the accommodation, we all ended up using a Trail Finders, I think it was, for it. Brilliant. And it was a whole included package. That package, obviously, for flights, return flights, then it got you down to picking the motorhome and that you wanted, that the company that you wanted. Well, there's one company under three umbrellas, and the three umbrellas for the motorhome really just come down to the age of the motorhome. It being one covers the age of the van being 1 to 2 years old, then they just, after 2 years old, the vans go into the next company, which is I think 2 to 4. Then it goes to the third company, it goes into 4 to 5 and 6, and then they sell them on. And then they offer different packages of gold, silver, and bronze, depending on how what you want included in your package.
And the brands of motorhome out there, a lot different? Are they more like the American style ones, or are they similar to what we have in Europe?
From a commercial point of view, they are generic, pretty much all the same. The reason being is they have a fixed chassis, fixed body, and exactly all the same layouts, which means from a maintenance point of view, they can keep plenty of spares if anything gets damaged and needs replacing. They all have aircon bases in it, but they're just generic. They're the same process, unless you're going again into the private market where you do see them in the campsites. Like America, you will have your long trailers with pickups taking them where they can extend. You will have even have auto trailer right there as well. And some, like, even if you get into the elements of, that's the motorhome, the caravan ones that are out there are built like tanks. I mean, you've seen them with boats carrying them on the motorhomes and on the caravans. So there's plenty of choice out there, but it's very, very different to what we have and experience in Europe.
Yeah, I'd say very much so. Sorry,
I think all I was just going to say there, because as Adrian says, these are hired as opposed to privately owned. The brand we went with was Brits, and that's probably one of the most common amongst those who were there for such a short space of time. Many individuals might buy a camper van if they were traveling for a longer period, but because it was only a 4-week duration for us, with the camper van, hiring it through Trail Finding just made the most sense. We hired a 6-berth. There's me, Adrian, and the two boys, and it was a perfect amount of space. It had everything we needed in terms of beds, bathroom, kitchen facilities, everything that we needed. And we chose to go for a 6-berth over a 4-berth just to give us an extra bit of space with having the two teenagers. They obviously didn't want to sleep together.
Yeah.
And also given how hot it is, they definitely didn't want to be in the same bed. So that's why we went for the 6-berth, and having that extra space certainly helped.
That's fair enough. And the seasons, I think, are reverse in Australia. So what time, when did you go out exactly? And most of, like, was it summertime over there or was it spring? Or
yeah, we flew out November 21st. So we were arriving into their summer. Their peak summertime would really be January. So it was late spring for them. And we came home on January 2nd. The hottest temperature we had was about 34, 35 degrees. Wow. But usually... aircon was definitely needed.
We had just got there. What was the tail end of, is there, I think, this rainy season, and there the kids were coming up to the end of their school year and get their summer holidays, which is a weird one to get because summer holidays over Christmas was there. So when we first arrived there, and I was and we met the nieces and nephews, they were still in school, and then we took the bulk of it and right up to the trip, and then right to Christmas, they were in, right bang in the middle of their summer holidays.
Very good. Yeah, and it's a bit unusual spending Christmas in glorious sunshine as well.
Definitely. You just don't feel Christmassy, because the most bizarre thing is when you still hear the Christmas carols that we know and love dashing through the snow, and you're in a t-shirt and shorts. It's just bonkers.
Yeah, but I could do it again. I definitely do it again.
Yeah, no, it sounds wonderful. It sounds amazing. And what points of interest, what interesting places did you find along that route? Actually, if you don't mind me asking, where did you start the route? Was it in like Brisbane or
we picked up the camper van in Sydney.
Okay.
And we were going up the East Coast, as I said, as far as Yeppoon, and then returning the camper van back to Sydney, because we were flying back out of Sydney. Other people can choose maybe to pick up the camper van in Sydney and travel all the way up to Cairns, or up to Brisbane or whatever. But no, we started off in Sydney and we returned to Sydney. And our first port of call was a national park. It was called Lake Mile National Park. And it was a perfect distance from Sydney. It's about 2.5 hours up, and again you're smack right beside the ocean, but there's also lakes there as well, and it was very rural setting. A couple of dingoes literally walked past us as we were having dinner, and conveniently we'd brought paddle boards with us. Adrian's sister had kindly arranged some paddle boards, so we were able to go down in the lake doing some paddle boarding there. But it was a nice place to start. It was a very basic campsite. Like, it was literally a compost toilet. That was it. But we were only there for the night, and it worked out perfect as a starting point, just to kind of get a feel for the place.
National parks are all like that. They're the cheapest places you can stay. You actually book them online on your phone and just give the reg number and they'll allocate you an area. But there's no electricity. There is just literally a composting toilet, so you're one with nature most of the time. They do give you circular rings for your fire pits where you can have your fire, because anywhere along your trip you can buy logs for your barbecue, and they ask you to maintain your fire within those allocated areas. But I mean, they're basic, but they're great. But when it's hot and you've no aircon, you can't run the aircon, you'll know about it. All right.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, did you have solar on the van?
There's solar to trickle charge on them, yes. Yeah. But again, with the amount of driving you do as well, you're recharging the batteries all the time, the leisure batteries and that. So, I mean, a drive is not a short basis. Roads can be fairly straight, but they can go on and on and on.
And did the kids have a favourite point along the route that they said was just amazing for them?
I'd say there was two points for them. One was Byron Bay, which is a very popular commercial large town, and I had been there as a backpacker, and it's just grown exponentially in terms of its appeal. They enjoyed it really because they did some surfing there, and it was a great opportunity for them to kind of get a sense of that. I would advise anyone who is going to those very popular destinations to book the campsites well in advance. Those kind of places, for Byron Bay, for Noosa, for Brisbane, I booked them months and months in advance because I had mapped out the itinerary quite rigidly. So we had a couple of days flexibility here and there, but other places we had to book. So I'd say Byron Bay was ranked very high on the boys' itinerary. And then also our last campsite was in a small little town called Emu Park. The campsite itself, this was literally the week before Christmas, and usually it's very, very busy. And it wasn't, but it was a very nice campsite, very clean and friendly people, again, smack beside the beach. And the four of us took a fabulous day trip out onto the Great Barrier Reef. And that was definitely a special highlight for all of us to be out snorkeling with the turtles and out on a glass bottom boat, and just magnificent part of the world.
Yeah, one of the things the kids enjoyed about it as well is, because we tend to move on every 2 to 4 days, and with that is go out and talk to the people, the locals. There's a lot of Australians who actually will go out every year, go to the same spot. They actually will move their caravans or move their motorhomes and leave them there for the whole summer in the one spot because they like their fishing and they do their bit of hunting. But it's great to go out and talk to them. Some of the stories you hear and the experiences they have is completely different to anything we have here. And we remember, and the kids remember a lot of this trip by the nickname of the person. Oh, that was Tent Man Tom, for example. was in that campsite, and they spent hours talking to people all through. They love to see about our experiences, and we love to hear about theirs and the change, the difference of life and camping.
I suppose, like our mentality as well, I suppose, is it same?
Very much so. Very much so. And I think because it'd be totally different if we were traveling with younger children, but because we were traveling with a 15 and 13 year old, they are more independent and chatty and happy to talk to other people. So it changes the dynamic of where we visit and what we wanted to do. One of the other highlights would have been on the Gold Coast. We did a water park. And that was a fabulous day. It really was. The kids certainly enjoyed doing the water park. And it was definitely one of the highlights for them.
Oh, I'm gonna bring in, though, right from the start, our youngest one brought in a game of geotagging. I don't know. It's an international global orienteering. You use an app on your phone, and people have these markers hidden or all over the world. And every time we stopped, from a petrol station to a park to a campsite, he'd open up the app, I got a SIM card from an Aldi SIM card, which cost about $40 Australian dollars, which lasted the month and gave me all the internet I needed, and so I'd give him the share of the broadband, and he'd go turn on the app and bring these on, and the two of them would disappear off. Now, again, we brought two-way radios, as we do at camping all the time. They disappear way off at the radio. They could be gone for ages hunting out these geotags. I mean, they went from the parks right in Sydney to even Shark. We found one in Shark Island on Sydney on a day trip that had been there for over 12 years. Some of these other ones, the hiding places, people had 3D printed branches and stuck them in the ground to make these spots that you hide the tag in.
Harder to find, yeah. We did a feature on one of the earlier podcasts about the geocaching as well. It's something the camping crew do every now and again as well. It's brilliant activity. It's
great.
It added to the trip. It even added to the refueling of the campervan trips because they go looking for somebody would have hidden a geotag somewhere in the area.
It's brilliant, yeah. No, it's really clever. And tell us about the campsites. Is there, like, how do they compare to the campsites in Ireland? And maybe is there different types of campsites there?
Yeah, they do vary, the campsites. Some of them, the ones you can go along would be could be race courses or stables, like ferry house or something like that, and part of the area set out for camping. One of those campsites we stayed in actually had the Christmas fair on while we were there. So that was a great experience. As that filled up one day, you were able to walk around the stalls and see what was going on. And there was some nice, interesting stuff, some fantastic crafts that people do and actually recycle materials and for sale. Other campsites, as I said, are very more commercial. They're nice. Showers are free pretty much everywhere. You don't have to pay for them. They're included. In fact, even the all campsites and all beaches have free showers. They also have free barbecues, free gas barbecues. It's a stainless steel plate gas barbecue. And they're everywhere, from national parks to ordinary parks to campsites. So you actually do very little cooking in your own vehicle. You will actually go out and use the free barbecue area, which is fantastic. And again, they have one sign: please leave it the way you'd like to find it. But with campsites, they all varied in prices as well, and varied from whether they were serviced, partially serviced, or just not. But they're not too much different from what we have around here in Europe and in Ireland.
Availability as well, I'd say, sir.
Yes and no. And I suppose I learned that the hard way by when I had to book. As I said, certainly the most popular ones on our route, Byron Bay, Noosa, Harvey Bay, I had to book literally in July to get a spot for the certain date I knew we were going through in December. I suppose two other things to answer that question. One was in a place we were stayed in called Bundaberg. It's a very busy town. Many people are transient, as they'd be out working on the sugarcane, for example, and many would be long-term residents in the caravan park. So the profile of people staying in those kind of caravan parks would be very much the workers, and then only a small number of pitches would be available for tourists. The one thing that did strike us totally in comparison to Ireland is the camper's kitchen is always very well stocked, but there's very little kind of activities or anything like that. So certainly by 8 p.m., often everybody was like, good night now, see you tomorrow.
And they were all out in bed.
But in fairness, in bed, yeah, because the sun just literally would go out of the sky. Obviously, sunsets were far earlier than what we were used to. So the whole campsite would be definitely quiet by 9 p.m. And then everybody would be starting to rouse again around 6 a.m. So I suppose in that circumstance, it was totally different to what we would experience in Ireland, to the point that it was at sometimes less sociable, because in Ireland, often the campsites would kind of be very sociable at night time as people go around chatting and having a drink or whatever, having campsites or campfires. So that was just a bit unusual for us. And it's certainly something to note.
Yeah, it came with the fact, I suppose, that even in the middle of summer, it is actually, it's pitch black at around 8 o'clock. Absolutely dark. And but then it is dead bright at 6 a.m. and warm. So people's way they live their life over Australia is they do go to bed early, but they're up at 6 in the morning. They've 3 hours before they go to work. They'll go out, they'll do a run, they'll have a paddle, they do things. They're up early. So while we're still fast asleep, they've already done an hour or two on that basis. What did, I suppose, help a little bit to the social as well was the World Cup was on. And for matches, I mean, people, those Europeans who were there traveling got up at 3 a.m, went to the camper's kitchen because there's always a TV there, and they watched the match. And there was a bit of banter and a bit of crack around that.
Brilliant, yeah. Great. And in terms of the upsides of going off to Australia, like, it definitely sounds like it was worth all the effort of planning that went into it. Like, were there any kind of downsides to it as well? What would you say, if you're going to do it, don't do this? Don't go here.
There's different experiences, I suppose, in what you're looking for. If you want to immerse yourself in Australia and the different types, is be open to visiting the different types of campsites, particularly even those who are might be linked to the working campsites, because people are staying in them while they work the land and move around, as opposed to the touristy ones. Things to watch out for in it. Is watch out for the rainstorms if you get them, if you get caught in one. It buckets down to and it can bucket down with ice cubes in the middle of a warm day. You get inroads of thunderstorm and it's striking like massive thunder and lightning, but the heavens open and visibility turns to zero. And with that, I suppose, is and you can see now why Australia does get floods, and on certain parts of the roads and motorways, you see flood markings, because you could be, there was a lot of civil works going on because of the end of the rainy season. What were decent roads had got completely washed away.
Wow.
And the guys were out working on them. When you're driving there, when you come across those civil works and so on, they do restrict the speed limit. And it took a bit of getting used to, because you could have miles and miles of this restricted speed limit where actually the road looks finished, but you still have to maintain that. And I think I got one or two flashes from other people thinking I was going to a little bit over it. It's a different experience and a scenario that you have to get used to.
And how did you find the road network itself? Like, were they decent kind of motorway style roads or national type roads like we have here?
So the roads on the main network are motorways. They're pretty good. They are excellent. You'll have no problem. There's plenty of petrol stations along the way. No problem with fuel. Now, prices on those vary by up to 20 cent. So it's one to watch the prices on it. But it's when you go off the roads into towns or off into the national parks, the roads can get awfully, awfully bumpy. And you'll notice every single rattle in the motorhome when you're on those roads. we know from the caravan bases that one of the first things we actually did when we picked up the motorhome was go to the supermarket, just buy rakes of tea towels so that we could wrap everything that we needed to, because we knew that, you know, this is a long journey, and if you don't have all that, and those roads will really can be bone rattling at times.
Simple solution, just wrap them up in details. You mentioned kind of the pricing there. Would you find it a little bit more expensive in Ireland, or same expensive? And
no, I would say if you're comparing campsites, as they keep saying, the commercial ones that are in very popular areas are far more expensive there than here. The ones that are aligned with national parks are dirt cheap. There would be probably about €20 a night, whereas the other ones would be much more expensive. And then naturally, we were there at kind of peak holiday time, so we were paying that kind of prices as well. I would say day-to-day items are more expensive in Australia, like tea, coffee, milk, butter, cheese, all those kind of basics. Those items are far more expensive, but I suppose the cost of living there in general is more expensive, so it's not a cheap holiday, but it was literally once in a lifetime, so it was worth it.
Definitely. And in terms of kind of managing money out there, did you have to say, I suppose, carry lots of the Australian dollars, or were you able to use kind of credit cards and stuff handy that way?
I remember going into a post office near work in Dublin. I took out maybe $400 with me in cash, and I found that really hard to spend because everything was literally tap and go. And we used Revolut all the time, and it was just the most cost effective way of doing it because of the ways you can avoid bank charges and commissions. So essentially, I would advise anyone that has a Revolut account to set up an Australian account within your own Revolut account and top that up consistently. The kids also have Revolut, so we were able to literally top up their Revolut cards, and they were tap and go. So it was a far less stressful way to money manage the entire trip. It was just much easier.
Brilliant. Well, that's great advice, actually. And is there any other little tips like that before we kind of finish out the interview? Is there any more kind of tips you give somebody if they're planning to do something similar?
I would, if you're out there and you're visiting every air beach you go to, nearly every stop, you will have a life surf rescue, or you have what was the
surf clubs.
Surf clubs and the army was
the RSLs,
they're reserve clubs, but they are very friendly, very open to visitors, and the food and the price in those is fantastic. It's great value for money. It is a fantastic facility. that they have in Australia for doing it, and they're all charities as well, and they are a great example of what could be done anywhere else in the world, for both for the services and the club that they cover, but also the extra services that they offer to tourists and food and hackers. So they were fantastic setups to have.
Great. Well, thanks for jumping on. So having driven in the motorhome now, are you kind of going to decide to sell on the caravan and get yourself some motorhome here for Ireland, or are you still kind of stuck in the caravan?
No.
Definitely stick with the caravan. For one of the main reasons being that I don't have to hear the plates and pots and pans rattle when I drive. I'm too much of a fan of the caravan.
No. And plus, I think what June hasn't told you is one of those thunderstorms that I talked about earlier. June got caught in one while we were on the beach, and the camper van was stopped. She went to go to the shops, and enrolled all of a sudden a thunderstorm came in, and unfortunately June got soaked to the bone and trying to get back. So whereas having a car and a caravan would have meant she could leave the campsite, take the car, and probably would have missed that. So I think we're going to stay with the caravan for another few years yet.
Folks, thanks for jumping on and talking to us about this. I think it's fascinating. I would love to be brave enough to get arrange something like that and go and do it. I think you just need to kind of bite the bullet really and go for it, don't you?
Definitely, because otherwise you'll regret not doing it. And I think I'm just so grateful we were able to do it. And it's certainly been a trip of the lifetime that all of us will remember.
Well, timing was right as well. I mean, our eldest was transition year and our youngest was first year. So the timing facilitated that. It was great. And as I said, all because of the COVID and everything, I hadn't seen my sisters and my nieces and nephews for quite a number of years now. So
it's fantastic. Yeah. I meant to say at the start of the call that some of the podcast listeners will recognize Adrian's voice, because Adrian has been on quite a few podcasts. I think episode 43 was the first one where you talked about the shared ownership of the caravan, and then you spoke about the lock and level device on episode 56. You mentioned this, you advised about the Vango Sky canopy then, I think on one of the 79, I think it was. And then we did a follow-up episode with you just about advice and tips for people getting a caravan for the first time. So you're an honorary camping crew member, I think, at this stage, Adrian.
Thank you.
Well, look, thanks for jumping on. And as I said, we'll definitely catch up again during the year. Hopefully we'll meet you on a campsite along route somewhere.
Fingers
hope
crossed.
So. Yep.
If we get to plan a meetup this year, which we hope to do, and hope we'll make it somewhere where everyone can get to, including yourselves.
Great. Oh, definitely. There was a few clashes when the dates got released last year, unfortunately, that we couldn't make. So we look forward to catching up again.
It's impossible to get a time that's going to sit everyone up. We tend to just try and do it at either end of the season just to make it more possible.
Wow. 6 weeks in Australia, Chris. Could you do it? Could you get 6 weeks off?
I probably wouldn't get 6 weeks on paid, but if I chance my arm, I'd say I could get to 6 weeks. All right. Yeah.
Oh, 6 weeks. Ferg, that sounded like a fantastic trip. And like I said in the interview, their kids are at the right age as well. And as I've always said about the camping crew kids, it's all about the memories, and they are going to have some memories from that trip.
That's a once in a lifetime holiday, like heading off 6 weeks somewhere just completely different. And it's interesting to see how things are done over there, kind of different to ourselves. I suppose one good thing is the driving is on the same side of the road as us.
Yes.
I imagine it's a lot different.
It sounded different, but yet, you know, camping is camping, really. You know, it was very similar. It's like, I suppose, going to France. The campsites are going to be better because the weather generally is better. But the weird thing is they were there for Christmas. And I've always said this when myself and Deirdre head to the States for Thanksgiving. I find it weird listening to White Christmas and Wham's Last Christmas wearing a pair of shorts and shades.
In the heat,
in the heat. And that's what the guys were saying, that was a bit weird. But I'd take it if I could get 6 weeks. Oh, it's something that and Route 66. I would love to do Route 66 in a camper van towing a car. Love to do it.
And it was done Route 66. Get in touch.
Yes, please do. In fact, if anybody's done a big trip like that, please do. We'll give you the contact details in a couple of moments as we head towards the end of the podcast. And thanks to Adrian and June for coming on board for that one. And well done you. Good interview, Chris.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Now, I was really interested in that one as well. So I was bought in right from the start there on it, you know. Just to close out the podcast, Aaron, I bumped into Stephen from Reese the Relay there on Instagram out in Kilmorin on Sunday. We were doing the hot pods and having a swim there. And he was there with a bunch of his crew there. They were camping, they had camping overnight. Stephen mentioned that he's heading off to France very soon. He said, look, he said, guys, good topic for the podcast. He said, tips for first timers heading off to France. Mm-hmm. He said, a lot of people will be interested in that. So he put a couple of tips for somebody starting to maybe plan a holiday and some advice and things to cover, like a checklist, I suppose. And look, this checklist could be miles and miles and miles long. Yeah. So this is some of the items that we put down, and we'd love to hear some of your tips, which we'll ask for again at the end.
Okay, so we'll start off with copies of all your paperwork. It's great having things on your phone, but I honestly think print off everything, have it in a folder and keep it in the glove box.
Yeah, things like your maybe a copy of your logbook, a copy of your insurance, all of that kind of stuff, just a backup, even so much as we'd always take a copy of our passports and all of that kind of stuff as well, just to have it, you know. You never know.
Before you head off, make sure your camper is serviced. Get everything checked. You know, remember, chances are you're going to be driving on the wrong side of the road, so you're going to need the light deflectors if your camper isn't a modern day one that has that as an option. So just make sure that you get the van well checked over before you go.
Yeah, I mentioned insurance as well. So check out what your insurance covered, what you are actually covered for when you're away in France. If you're covered at all, you know, if you need extra cover, can you get that? Well, personal travel insurance is also really important as well. And if you've got health insurance, make sure what you're covered with on that as well. Just kind of know, you know, what you can do, like.
And remember, you don't have to sail back with the same ferry that you sailed out with. If you want to sail into Bilbao and sail home from Santander, so do the research on the ferries. And if you're bringing dogs, try and get dog friendly cabins. So definitely do your research. Now, my little tip here is I do all the research. I go into filling in all the details online, but then I make the call at the last minute. I actually just physically like to talk to somebody. I seldom get it cheaper. It's just I want to talk to Mary at the end of the phone after filling in all the details and go through it again. And especially when we're trying to get a cabin for Charlie. So do your research. Look at all the ferry companies. And remember, you don't have to sail to Cherbourg and sail home from Cherbourg. You can go to one place and come home from another.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And I think the time of the year will determine the price you pay as well. Mm-hmm. But Arnold liked me for this one. What I say is there's lots of YouTube channels out there, including Charlie and me, but lots of YouTube channels where people have done this. They've gone all the different routes. You can kind of get to look and get a few tips for places to go before you go. You don't necessarily have to follow people's routes completely, but look, there's definitely some great suggestions that you can check out beforehand. So, you know, get stuck into YouTube, I'd say.
Absolutely, yeah. And have an area in mind, like, for example, if you are going to come into Cherbourg, even if you're coming home from Cherbourg, if you know you've 2 weeks, try and plan kind of, well, look, we'll make it to mid-France or down south. Just try and plan it and then look at the YouTube channels and look at all the videos, because we're not the only ones doing campsite reviews. There are thousands of them out there. And apps. Get apps. Now, there's one app I got last year called Camping Car App, and it gives you every single air in France. Now, I put 80 quids worth of credit onto it, so you can literally book it from the app and it'll read your reg plate coming in, or you'll have a code coming in. So definitely get like park for nights, motorhome parking locations, camper contact. But the only one that I can recommend, because I've used it, is camping-car park. And that's an absolute brilliant app for airs, but it'll let you know everywhere you can park safely, free and with a cost.
Yeah, there's lots of places where you can kind of book kind of campsites by groups as well. You know, there's kind of some of the ASCII ones and some of the others. So there's, you know, those are the apps that are mentioned are just some recommendations. There's lots more. And if you have some that you used, you might get in touch with us as well and let us know. We'll pass them on. We're planning to do a follow up on this, by the way. What we did when we went, we got a window sticker, Aaron, that I put up in the corner just where the visor falls down. And what it does is gives you a little visualization of the right side of the road. So when you're in France, you know, you're kind of keeping kind of more to the right. So this sticker kind of is like a little reminder. So yeah, I should be over here, not here, just for the first few days. I felt that was really, really helpful.
But yeah, stick a reminder somewhere, or make sure your co-pilot says wrong side of the road, hon. You know, just be mindful that you are driving. on what we call the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
And you know what, if you're deciding to wild camp, a lot of people will wild camp because of Ayers and so many places, but if you're not, their season is July and August. If you're thinking of heading July and August, you will more than likely have to book campsites in advance. Just bear that in mind. Their school holiday season is between July and August, so wild camping shouldn't be a problem. But if you want the sites with the swimming pools and the restaurants and the bars, you will have to book in advance. So do your homework.
Yeah, and look up the laws and the rules for driving in France. And, you know, certain tolls need certain setup. So look, make sure you know kind of the route you're going, and then check kind of the rules of the road and the laws and all of that. Lots of great information online about that. So look, do your research on that as well.
Now, I'm sure you'll know about this. I'm sure there's translating apps out there, because my French wouldn't be the best. I just wanted to learn how to say chips and thank you, and I was happy out. Is there a talky Google Translate thing you can talk into?
Yeah, the one we used was Google Translate as well. And what's good about that is if you're looking at a menu or reading a sign, you can hold the camera up and it will actually it'll convert and translate it there live. But there's lots of other apps as well. Again, if you've used one that you recommend, send it on to us.
Right. Listen, there's lots more. We could go on. We could do a whole show about this. But if you have tips or apps or places to go, must-see places, please do let us go. Let us know about it and get in touch.
Yeah, I'm going to put out a post after the podcast on our Instagram and our Twitter asking for your tips. And we'll do a follow up next week, because I'm sure there's lots of stuff we missed off that. So look, if we want to get people involved in the podcast, this is maybe a good way to do it.
And if, like June and Adrian, you've been somewhere, or you're planning on going somewhere, or you've a holiday story to tell us, be it a good one or a horror story, we'd like to hear them too, because we do know things go wrong. Please do get in touch. Remember, we've got stickers for your motorhome, your campervan, your caravan, your car. We need your name, your address, and your postcode. But to do that, you have got to get in touch with us. And Chris is all the ways to do that.
Our email address is campingcrewpodcast@gmail.com. Our webpage is thecampingcrew.ie. On Twitter, we're @thecampingcrew. On Instagram, we're @thecampingcrewpodcast. Facebook, you'll find us posting in all the good motorhome and camping groups. You can leave us an audio message. The best way to do that is to record it on your phone, in your record app or your voice app, and just email it to us. But there is a link on our webpage if you want to do it through our podcast hosting site.
And as we mentioned earlier on, campsitereview.com, we have a forum there that's free, and it always will be. You can just read the forum, join the forum, and put your troubles worth in there. And on Wednesdays, it's the van build videos. But on Fridays, we go back to reviewing our campsites. It's youtube.com/CharlieandMe, our camping vlog. We are well and truly into the holiday season. The weather has been brilliant for the last couple of days and is set to continue seemingly right through June. So fingers crossed for that. If you see us on a campsite, please do call over and say hi. From me, Aaron Birchall, stay safe.
Yeah, and if you're enjoying the podcast, lads, you might give us a positive review or rating on whatever app you're using, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Amazon, wherever it is, if there's a facility there to rate it. We'd love your help in getting the show boosted up there. But look, if you are enjoying it, the most important thing you can do is to tell your camping friends all about us. It's goodbye from me, Chris.
Well, that's it for another podcast from The Camping Crew. Thanks for listening, and do join us again very soon. Safe camping.